Welcome back to the Florida History Podcast. I'm Carter Krishnire, and today we're going to continue our look at forts around Florida, and we're going to talk about Fort Mose, which has the distinction of not only being a fort, but also being the first free African-American settlement in what is now the United States. Really important place historically, a place whose history was, I believe, deliberately buried, deliberately hidden for many years in the American period, if that's what we want to call it, after the Americans took over Florida, played a very important role for the Spanish in the defense of the colony from the British. And then, as I'm going to talk about extensively in a book I'm writing currently that will be out in a few months, this coming November, the British, who brought their own very backward views about slavery and race to governing Florida, abruptly changed those views once the American Revolution started, because at that point, the British aristocracy and the Tory class of Britain, quite frankly, realized the shock value of arming African Americans and turning them against plantation owners. So anyway, let's talk a little bit about... So at Fort Mose and Spain's willingness to harbor runaway slaves, not only harbor them, but allow them to convert to Catholicism and then become ordinary, normal citizens, tasked with the same sort of tasks that the Spanish colonists themselves were, was a great threat to the psyche of the British to the north, of the British colonists, who, of course, as we know, in later years would be very, very aggressive in defending slavery and racial institutions from any outsiders, including from Great Britain, right, who themselves evolved on the issue of slavery. Now, at this point in the 1740s, Great Britain dominates the slave trade. They are the great perpetrators of slavery. They are the great beneficiaries of slavery. They are profiting off of the triangular slave trade. Now, there is domestic opposition that begins to spring up. There is the Enlightenment going on in Europe, and that Enlightenment does spread to Great Britain, and there are thinkers and writers and politicians in Great Britain who begin to oppose the idea of human slavery, oppose the slave trade, oppose the very racist construct around North American slavery and slavery in the Caribbean. And so that becomes a theme and an issue in internal British politics going forward, which is part of the reason why I think that there was some real differences of opinion within the United Kingdom, and eventually a difference of opinion between the United Kingdom and the independent United States of America. Although, ironically enough, the United Kingdom, despite outlawing slavery on their own and being really kind of the place where people like Frederick Douglass could go to speak and would get financial support, and of course Canada as well. Canada was part of the British Empire. They had outlawed slavery and they were very anti-slavery, and the Underground Railroad made its way to Canada. In spite of that, Britain continued to benefit from slave labor all the way until the end of the American Civil War. There is actually an argument to be made now, in hindsight, economically, that despite Thomas Jefferson's hatred of the British and Thomas Jefferson's Francophile disposition, that Hamilton being into modernizing the U.S., industrializing the U.S. into the kind of monetary policy he was, economic nationalism, if you want to call it that, or not even economic nationalism. I would say he was effectively kind of a free trader, but understood that there were certain things in the international trade that were beneficial to the United States, and that included trade with Britain. I would argue that Jefferson and slavery and this real dependence on slave labor
and certain crops like cotton effectively made the American South an economic colony of the United Kingdom and to a lesser extent France after independence, long term, from about 1810, 1820 onward. The American South was effectively a colony once again of European powers because they were so dependent on slave labor and the slave trade and selling goods produced because of the slave trade to Europe. So Jefferson may have hated the British, and he and his followers may have thought Hamilton was effectively a British agent, but in reality, Hamilton did more, in my opinion, to establish an independent U.S. economy that was vibrant than Jefferson, whose advocacy of slavery and keeping people of African descent in bondage actually made his beloved South an economic colony of Great Britain once again, even after being achieving political independence. Anyway, that's a topic probably for a completely different podcast, maybe not even one on Florida. So let's get back to the War of Jenkins' Ear. On October 23rd, 1739, just as South Carolina is undergoing a number of slave rebellions, which are inspired by the situation in Florida, as we've talked about, the freedom on offering in Florida, Britain formally declared war on Spain. Naval operations had begun the previous day, October 22nd, by the Royal Navy against the northern ports of South America, and these would be the ports in what is now Guyana and Colombia. Meanwhile, Governor Oglethorpe of Georgia was raising an army to invade Florida. The force included English colonists from the Carolinas and Georgia, as well as their Native American allies, the Creeks. By December, Oglethorpe was effectively raiding Spanish forts along the northern coast of Florida. This is effectively between north of St. Augustine and San Augustin, as it was known at the time, northward toward the St. John's River, towards the mouth of the St. John's River. Unbeknownst to the British, the Spanish had taken the founding of Georgia as an impetus to reinforce and strengthen the Castillo de San Marcos, that we obviously have done a whole podcast on the building of the Castillo. In January 1740, a tall watchtower and a new parapet was added to the fort. Very, very significant when you're talking about a coming siege from the British. In May 1740, Oglethorpe's force decided to take aim directly at St. Augustine. Four forts, including Fort Mosse, four forts outside St. Augustine, fell to the British. On June 13th, the British began a siege at St. Augustine, and the Royal Navy blockaded the town. Seven British warships sat outside the inlet. Just outside the inlet, in fact, they were just kind of lining up on the Atlantic Ocean side, but there's the inlet where it comes into the Matanzas River, and the ships were queued up there. Governor Manuel de Montellano, who we've talked about in the previous episode, had only about 900 professional soldiers at his disposal for the town's defense. I mean, that's a very small force. The governor petitioned Havana in Cuba, which had much stronger defenses and much more men, for reinforcements and prepared for a long siege of St. Augustine with rather minimal provisions. So at this point, St. Augustine's surrounded, right? They've got the inlet. They've got ships outside the inlet. The British had occupied Fort Mosse, which is 2 miles north of the city walls in St. Augustine, or actually more or less like a mile and three quarters maybe north of the Castillo. But so they have that position. They have 200 troops there under Colonel William Parker. And they had blockaded the inlet. So there's no way for Spanish provisions, reinforcements to come in and out. And the British land forces had been south of the town since mid-May. They occupied Anastasia Island, which, as most of you probably know, is right across the inlet, is right across the Matanzas River to the south of the inlet. And all of the areas that currently make up St. Augustine Beach. So at this point, Governor Montiano realizes the Spanish have to relieve some of the pressure around St. Augustine. So what they did is they attacked Fort Mosse and inflicted heavy, heavy British casualties. The town's inhabitants had already retreated to St. Augustine when, of course, and again, I think this man deserves his own podcast, and so we're going to do it at some point. Fernando Menendez had led, and Governor Salgado, who had been the kind of the governor of the town of Fort Mosse, gathered Spain's Seminole Native American allies, and they had their contingent of free African Americans. So they launched a surprise attack on Fort Mosse with upwards of about 300 free blacks and Seminoles combined. The result was their force, flying the flag of Spain, ended up killing up to 75 British soldiers. 35 others were captured, while Spanish losses were relatively small. Less than 10 deaths among the free blacks and Seminoles that were fighting for the Spanish. Colonel William Palmer, was among the British dead. So... and remember, there's a great deal of passion for this fight. Spain has given these African Americans freedom. They've converted to Catholicism, and they have been given their freedom. And as I think we see throughout history, you have situations where there are a great passion on the part of those who have been liberated to not be enslaved again. Great passion on the part of someone like Francisco Menendez, who had suffered so deeply at the hands of the British, and actually later in his life, again, this is why we probably have to do a podcast on him. What an important individual in the history of Florida. Francisco Menendez would be captured again by the British in the future, and after that would escape back to... back to Spanish Florida. Antonio Salgado, of course, we mentioned also leading this force. Following this surprise attack, the Spanish forces and its native allies fell back into the city walls, and the defenses of the capital, which was San Agustin, began. Eventually, all the residents and those who had fled to the town were moved into the Castillo. Those who didn't move into the fort fled into the woods and into the swamps nearby. San Agustin and the surrounding area, home to normally, about 2,000 to 2,200 residents, was completely empty. So everybody is in the Castillo. Most everybody's in the Castillo. Those who are not have fled into the woods and the swamps nearby to fight against the British. On July 6th, the defense looked like it was cracking. Provisions had not arrived to reinforce the town. The British were bombarding the fort, and they also had the inlet blocked. They killed two Spanish defenders. But the Castillo held, Coquina Rock, and the long guns from the fort were proving a menace for the British attackers. Finally, on July 7th, Spanish ships from Havana arrived and incredibly blocked the British blockade of the inlet. Get into the inlet, restock the town. And now the town had provisions for the foreseeable future. In fact, the town had provisions for several months more of a siege. And with the population of the town largely behind the walls of the Castillo, and more defenders who could take on the role of snipers and guerrilla fighters, if you will, that's a modern term, but guerrilla fighters in that era, sitting in the swamps and the woods outside St. Augustine.
So St. Augustine is saved, but Fort Mosse had been abandoned, even though they had cleared the British from the area. Now, what happens 12 years later is the new Spanish governor of La Florida tells Menendez and the other free blacks living in St. Augustine that they must go back into their own settlement and rebuild Fort Mosse. And so the cosmopolitan nature of St. Augustine
which had been enhanced by all these free blacks and heroes like Francisco Menendez living in St. Augustine, gets stripped. So and you're looking at a situation where at that point you have about 3,000 blacks, African Americans in St. Augustine, which is a huge percentage of the population. And three quarters of them were escaped slaves from colonies to the north, including Menendez. So they're forced to rebuild Fort Mosse. And that's the area we called Fort Mosse 2. It's just south of where the original Fort Mosse was. Or excuse me, just north of where the original Fort Mosse was. Now it's a nature walk. They actually, the state acquired the funds to preserve the site of Fort Mosse 2 from Florida Forever funds, which of course means that they came from environmental funds. But in any event, the settlement doesn't last long. The British get control of Florida in 1763. And the free African Americans all leave the colony. Now, the British brought their ideas of plantation slavery that they had implemented in the colonies to the north, Virginia, the Carolinas. It came to Georgia later. Georgia was originally a free colony, which a lot of folks don't realize. James Oglethorpe, who we talked about earlier, he was anti-slavery, actually. But once Oglethorpe was gone, Georgia became like any other southern colony. They brought that to East Florida in particular after they acquired Florida. But as will be discussed extensively in a book that I'm writing currently, America, and about Florida and the American Revolution. The book should be out November 15th of 2023. The British changed their mind about this once the American Revolution broke out. They began arming, they began encouraging runaway slaves just as the Spanish had done. They began arming blacks. You could see blacks armed with muskets and bayonets walking the streets of St. Augustine. Of course, the Americans won the war, and East Florida was returned to the Spanish in 1784. And the fort was, Fort Mosse was refurbished, if you want to call it that, reinforced, but was occupied by the Americans in the Patriots War, something we're going to talk about a little more when we get into discussing the forts in the Fernandina Beach area in this series. The American invaders who made their way through northeast Florida with, I believe, based on my historical research, the tacit approval of President, I shouldn't even say tacit approval, I think really with the blessing of President James Madison and Secretary of State James Monroe. They had encroached on Spanish Florida, of course, Spain and Britain, we should mention. Obviously, so much of what we've talked about with these forts are in the St. Augustine area are based on wars between Spain and Britain. But in the early 1800s, Spain and Britain are allies and are fighting in a European war together against France. And Spain has effectively let the British in back into Florida. That's a discussion that deserves greater time than what we're going to give it on this podcast. Although in our Andrew Jackson Invades Florida series, or Andrew Jackson Steals Florida series, which we did earlier this year, we have a lot on that about the Anglo-Spanish alliance and the Spanish who were hardly governing Florida as it is, right? They effectively let the British arm the Native Americans, the Seminoles, who were in a tacit alliance. It wasn't a formally written alliance, but really the Seminole people and the British were in an alliance for 40 some odd years, from the American Revolution until 1818. And the British are arming the Seminoles, and there were British agents all over Florida. So Fort Mosse gets captured by the Americans and destroyed and burnt down, and that's that. And obviously, the Americans had their own views about race and slavery, which were far more, what's the term I'm looking for here? Far more illiberal than that of the Spanish or the British by this time. Certainly far less, I'm trying to be diplomatic with my language, but really the Americans were terrible. So when it comes down to it on the issue of race. So Florida becomes American in 1821, and you better believe that the Americans are never going to have any sort of trace of a free black settlement there. Forgot to mention, during the Revolutionary War, the British actually had also reinforced Fort Mosse as a potential defensive buffer if the Americans were able to get close to St. Augustine. As I'm writing about in the book that I, as I said, will be out in November of this year, of 2023, the Americans made several attempts to invade East Florida. They never got further than Thomas Creek, which is a creek just north now of where Jacksonville International Airport is. It's about 3 miles north of JAX. So they never got further than that. They never got further than the northern part of what is now Duval County. But the British were very conscious that the Americans were consistently going to try and come into Florida and take St. Augustine. So Fort Mosse was reinforced at that point as well. Burnt down by the Americans finally in the War of 18, or the Patriots War, which was an adjacent conflict to the War of 1812. We'll be back next week with another discussion of another fort in Florida. Thank you for listening. You can get the Florida History Podcast wherever you get podcasts.